We have our final pair to meet this Thursday evening in your Lancashire, and they are a pair. They come to us together. We've got Harry and we've got Roz. Welcome, the pair of you. Thank you for being here, welcome. Harry.
Thanks for having us.
And Roz, it's the first time we've had a couple on, which makes it a slightly different dynamic, I suppose. What I'm going to do is split you up, only figuratively, to talk about you before you got to know each other, because we like to go back. I'll start with you, Harry, if I can.
Okay. Yeah.
And we always ask people, what do you remember of your first drink?
My first drink? I think I was about 7 years of age, and it was my dad. My dad always used to, all he ever used to do, he had a couple of pints and play a game of bowls. Hmm. But at Christmas, he used to treat himself to a bottle of Drambuie. Half a bottle of Drambuie is where he always used to get, and I used to pester him for a taste of this stuff, because I saw him.
Yeah.
He loved it. And I tried it, and oh God, I was sick. I was ill. It was horrible.
I'm not fond of myself,
to be fair. Oh, no, it was foul. And after that, I remember we used to have a party at Christmas, I think it was, and the next door neighbours, and used to go in and out of each other's houses, and there was only a kid, and I used to sneak in, and I'd sneak in and drinking gin and lime, and liking the taste of lime.
Yeah.
And I was feeling quite giddy after a couple, you know, and I thought, ooh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So that was my first sort of drink.
So you'd associate then alcohol with things like Christmas parties, all the good things in life, because we do, we celebrate, don't we? Pack the drinks out, it's Christmas, have a Christmas cheer, you know?
Yep, that's it.
And all that. And what did you went on to have a drinking career, as we call it?
I did have a drinking career, yeah. It was... As you say, as a teenager and a young adult, I started going into Liverpool and into the clubs and, you know, bars and things like that. And it was just drinking. It was just, that was what you did.
Yeah.
You went out on a Friday night and you went out on a Saturday night and you went to the Cavern and you went to different places, you know.
And in somewhere like Liverpool, legendary, wonderful nightlife, lots of bars, lots of, you know, and you went and you drank and
that's
and
it.
You had a skinful, and that's what
and that's
people
it.
Did.
And then you found your way home somehow. I used to live in about 6 miles outside the city centre, but I used to walk home because I couldn't afford a taxi because I spent all my money on the booze. So I'd end up walking home, and that was it, you know. And it just sort of progressed. But
that's how you got started.
That's how I got started. Yeah.
Roz, is any of that ringing bells with you? What about how did you start your first drink?
It was... For me, I remember distinctly thinking I loved the effect that, so it gave me, I didn't like the taste. I remember going to the pub with my older sister, and she was well into drinking at that point, and I was just probably shy of 17, I think, maybe 16 and a half, and hated the taste but loved the effect. And I remember thinking, and I often share this in meetings, that I remember going to the toilet in the pub and thinking, I found a solution to give me confidence, you know, and I very quickly loved the drunk, or the tipsy, I used to say. Of course, I never admitted to being drunk. And I loved the personality that I felt it gave me. Now, looking back now, I see that was a massive symptom of my alcoholism.
You said things there that I've heard so many times. Typically, you know, people's first drink, they don't even like the taste of it.
That's right.
But they get a feeling.
Oh, yeah.
A feeling of warmth, or a feeling of strength, or those social anxieties.
It was kind of
melt
empowerment
away.
Almost.
Empowerment is another word that it makes you feel 10 feet tall, and all of a sudden, instead of being self-conscious,
yeah,
look at me.
That's
and,
right, absolutely.
And, you know, party animal sort of thing. So you used it as a tool for, you know, making yourself feel a little better about yourself, you know, and so on. And what were your weapon of choice? What would you be drinking?
It used to just be lager and lime, I think, initially. You
know,
it was all that. And I would have never at that point have imagined that I would have become an alcoholic. You know, I, at that well, for a lot of years after that, you know, I was...
Well, much like Harry, it's what people did.
Yeah.
You went to the pub and you had a few beers and you got giddy, you got drunk, and that's...
I always wanted to do it, though. Looking back, like, I wanted to go to the pub every single night.
Right. That feeling, for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at that young age of 17, 18, that's what I wanted to do. And I felt really happy doing that, you know, and it kind of limited any other choices. I kind of didn't develop then. I don't think, you know, there are certain things that I used to aspire that I'd like to have done. I'd like to have been a nurse, but of course I couldn't apply myself to anything else because I just literally.
Because it was the all important drink that.
I think so now, looking back, you know. I mean, for a lot of years, you know, during my 20s, I had 4 children, so I was pregnant for a lot of the time. I was married young. I had 4 children in 7 years, and I would have never then, in between the pregnancy, I would always enjoy a drink, but I'd never would have imagined that it was going to get hold of me. I just thought I was, what's that thing you say, special, unique and different. I thought that for me, also, and I am, and my father's died now, and I'm the daughter of an alcoholic, so I compared my drinking to his.
And you thought,
and it
well,
was
I'm,
nothing like that.
Well, I don't drink like that, so I must be all right.
Well, I'm very arrogant about it, really, looking back. You know, I thought untouchable.
Maybe you're on yourself there with arrogance. It's just we all measure ourselves by certain goals, yardstick standards. And I can understand if you thought, well, I'm not an alcoholic, because an alcoholic drinks like that.
That's right.
And I'm not drinking that. You know what I mean? I'm just having a few lagers and thinking. Yeah. You know, that everything's all right. Harry, you enjoyed a drink and, you know, there's no bones about it. And work came along. You'd have been working.
Well, yeah, I was working. I was working in the civil service. And we used to go out, and it was a regular routine. We'd go out, when we used to get paid at the end of every month, we'd all go out and we'd meet. Because we all worked on the docks, and we worked in various docks. We'd all the lads would get together once a month. And you go into town, you go into Liverpool, and you'd all meet up in a pub at lunchtime. Yeah. And you'd all get plastered for the afternoon, and that was it. But I'm like Rose, I never liked the taste. I didn't like the taste of alcohol.
It's become an acquired taste because they want the effect, but to get the effect, you've got to drink the liquid. And
why I didn't drink. I didn't drink sort of, I worked in a pub for a little while and I didn't like bitter. I didn't like, mild. I didn't like any of them. Double Diamond was, when the lager came out, I thought I can just about tolerate this if I put something with it.
Right.
And then I found brandy and that was my elixir, was brandy.
Brandy came along and
brandy
that worked all of a sudden. You shook hands and there we are.
That was it. That was the story. Thanks very much.
So
I'm off.
You're drinking, you're meeting up with the lads, you've got your brandy, all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
At what point did you think, wonder or know that you had an issue?
It's probably after I had, Rose was talking there about, she had 4 children. We'd been married before, both of us.
Yeah.
And it was after my probably second marriage breakdown that I thought, there's something wrong here and it's me. The problem is me, not the other person, not anything like that. The problem was me.
But then interesting.
And then I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop then. There was no... I had an on button, but no off button.
Right.
So whenever I started, all bets were off. And that was it.
It's really interesting that you sort of realised that in all these things, you were the common denominator, so it must be you, which is quite self-aware. I think for somebody in that far down the path, you know.
I don't know. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was then we talk about a window of opportunity, and maybe that was the one, and I missed it. I missed that and just carried on straight path because I didn't want to stop drinking because I liked the effect. I loved that effect.
Okay.
Effect put me in hospital.
Did it?
It's I had a burst ulcer. Which was down to drinking. Burst my appendix. I was in hospital. For a while, the first thing I did when I came out, opened a bottle of brandy. That was it. Carry on. Let's go.
So there were lessons. I mean, we're not judging you. Nobody's judgmental, but I don't want to be Johnny Smartpants. But you've pieced together that you've got a couple of failed marriages, you reckon that you're the problem, your drinking has led you into hospital, and it's caused severe medical issues, and you come out and you think, right, where's the brandy?
Yeah.
There would be people who would say, you're mad, man. At what point wasn't your brain screaming, stop, put the brakes on?
No. Well, the brain was screaming, give me another drink. Another alcoholic will understand that.
Yeah.
It's give me another drink, you know, and that's what I want to do.
So how long did this go on for? How long?
Went on for, God knows, went on for years. I was on my, was I on there? I lose track. Sorry, I'm digest. It was my third marriage, and it was suggested then at that point that I better get some help because I was drinking too much. So I went to AA. I phoned the helpline. I went to AA. It was in 1990. And I stuck around for about 3 or 4 months. I went just before Christmas. And I stuck around for about 3 or 4 months. And then I thought, nah, I'm too clever for you people. I know more about this than you people. So I remember going on holiday. And I got all the warnings before I go, oh, don't do this, don't do that. And I was there 2 days and I picked up a drink. And I never went back to AA for 12 years.
Wow.
And that was just carnage after that. That was just ridiculous.
So what took you back to AA? Because you decided, yeah, I'm not better than that. Well,
I got sick and tired of me.
In what sense? Can you explain that?
Well, we call it sick and tired of being sick and tired. I would wake up every morning, and the first thing I would do of a morning, my eyes flicked open of a morning, and the first thing I would do is crawl to the bathroom and throw up.
Right.
That was my morning routine. I'd drag myself up to look in the mirror, and could barely look in the mirror, because I hated what I saw, I hated what I'd become, and yet I couldn't stop. And I knew early on that if I had a drink that day, I'd try and say, right, that's it, I'm not having a drink today, and it'd be what we call white knuckling it, and I couldn't, you know, trying to stop, but that would usually last. I usually swore off on a solemn oath on a Sunday, and I was white knuckling on the Monday, I was drinking on the Tuesday, and as soon as I had a drink, all bets were off again.
Yeah,
that's it, couldn't stop. They kicked in again, the cycle continued, and it was on and on and on. Until I got to that point where I was literally sick and tired of doing it. I'd been signed off by the doctor numerous times for depression or whatever they used to call it, different things, and put on sort of antidepressants and stuff like that, and that seemed to go okay. They were okay, so they were even better with a few brandies, and you're flying again, and...
So you're patching yourself up. You're literally just winging it
all the time,
and
there was a friend who she knew in work. She knew me, and she'd said she recommended this doctor to go and see this homeopath. So I went to see her, and she was the first person I was honest with. I told her how much I drank. Really told her how much I drank. Because the doctors had asked me before, and I, as we all do, we'd cut it in half. Or
I don't think anybody's honest when your doctor says, how many do you smoke, how many do you drink, or just the odd one at weekend, you know.
Oh, I only have a couple of pints, stuff like that. And that was my famous, if you had a tagline, that was mine, I'll only have two tonight, love. That was it. Only having two. And then the wheels would come off.
So why go back to AA when you've decided, nah, rubbish that?
I had nowhere else to go. There was nowhere else to go. I'd heard people talk about going to alcohol awareness, and I'd inquired about them, and they were talking about drinks diaries and things like that, and I just lie. So there was no point in that. So on a Monday night in, it was just going light, so it was probably about March or April 2002, I rocks up at a meeting in Southport, and as I say, I'd been to AA previously, and the lad there came to meet me, and he shook hands, and he said, is this your first meeting, lad? And I said, no, I've been before. And he said, okay. And he took me in, sat me down, had a cup of tea. And that was the start of me back into AA.
I love that welcome and the fact that at AA, you can fail 100 times and they'll treat you 101st, fresh start.
Yeah.
Just like your first one, there's no judgment, no, you know, you're not thought of as a failure, you're not thought of as, you've lost it.
I mean, Rose, I envy Rose and, other people like Rose. As a friend of mine, went to the first meeting and I've never drunk since. That's amazing.
Is that the case, Rose? I mean, you went and it worked, it stuck right away?
Yeah.
And that with that. When did you realise you had a problem, Rose? When did you know that I've got to do something? Because we left you just enjoying the lagers and doing as people do, and it's what we all do, isn't it? So when did you figure, actually, no, this isn't quite right?
It's quite a lonely kind of a journey into alcoholism, if you like. And what kind of started to happen to me was that, it was... Obviously, I knew I had the evidence of my father's drinking, and my drinking wasn't like that. And that's what I used to tell myself. I never drank in the morning. I never drank vodka. So I started to do things that would prove to me that I wasn't alcoholic. But those last couple of years, really, I think it was around 2000. My mother died in 2000. My father had died in 1999, and then mum died in the year 2000. And I was really starting to unravel then. I was in my 40s. And
stressful life events, though, happening so close.
Lots of things. And together, there'd been some major, a couple of big events had happened previously to that. And, I never blamed that for... Well, I kind of blamed it for my drinking, and I used to think, oh, it's because, it's because of this, it's because of that. And but I was drinking because I was an alcoholic, basically. Lots of... And I can remember, thinking other people have had bereavement, other people have had loss, other people have had divorce, other people have been unhappy, and they weren't doing what I was doing, And I started just to think, oh, my God... I think I'm an alcoholic, but I couldn't say it to a living soul because I didn't. The idea of giving up this wine every night was just, and of course I was in denial, and I was lying to myself really for a lot of. It was 2000 when I started to really unravel, and I got to 2000 in January 2006. But that previous year I started, and I do believe, that was for me a higher power moment, was that a sober life started to become attractive to me.
More attractive
than the life that
you
I
had.
Was leading, absolutely. Now, I thank God today that happened to me because it has remained attractive, being sober.
Yeah.
To me is the greatest gift I've ever been given.
Well, as you said, you walked in that first time and it stuck. You were one of the people who
I do think I was fortunate because I'd witnessed my own father was a chronic alcoholic, and he went to his first AA meeting and he stayed sober. So I knew, as much as I didn't want to be going down that route then when I was in my 20s, when Dad got sober, I knew by the time I was in my 40s that, this... I've no idea how it worked or what happened in those meetings, but it's certainly... And my obsession with alcohol was removed from me very, very quickly,
Well, normally what we'd do is we'd be wrapping up here and asking how long you've both been sober, but it's the first time we've had a couple. So what we're going to do, we've asked you to choose a song each, and you've chosen... Tracy Chapman, Fast Car. Tell me about that song and tell me why that is such an important song for you, Ross.
I think it kind of reminded me of somebody letting their life pass them by. She tried to get out from under, not from alcoholism, but from her father's alcoholism. Mm. And it used to make me cry when I used to hear it. And I used to hear it when I first met Harry, he used to play that song quite a lot, and it just used to evoke that feeling of just so grateful that I got out from under, that I found a solution, I found AA, I found recovery. I got out of a situation which was going to kill me, my liver was very damaged, and it just gave me the opposite of what happened to her, if you like.
Yeah, you got out. Let's have a listen. Yeah. It's a great song. Yeah. Tracy Chapman on BBC Radio Lancashire, 20 to 10. More to come from Harry and Rose, including Harry's song choice. And some of your comments as well next. You've been getting in touch and saying very nice things about the show. We'll have some of those. And we'll talk about when Harry met Rose and how they got together. I suspect it's quite the story.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. You got a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs and finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says his body's too old for working. His body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. Wanted more from life than he could give. I said, somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school and that's what I did. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? We gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights stay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. Got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. Now work in the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter. Buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs. So I remember when we were driving in your car. So fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us. Your arm felt nice, wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all our bills. Instead of drinking late at the bar, see more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. So take your fast car and keep on driving. So I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights stay out before us. Your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so you can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
Tracy Chapman on BBC Radio Lancashire, exactly 15 minutes to 10 o'clock. John Gilmore would normally join us now, but given that we're in conversation on this special programme, I'll tell you that Gilly is with you after the 10 o'clock news. He'll have some great guests for you. I'm sure we'll catch up with Gilly next week. Messages coming in. Message from Georgia. I hope I'm saying that right, Georgia. Thanks for hosting this. Thanks for the fellow shares. I'm Georgia and I'm an alcoholic. I owe my life to the AA program and fellowship, and I'm eternally grateful to the founders of AA. I was a hopeless alcoholic and could not do this alone. When I walked into the rooms, I was broken. I couldn't live properly or die properly. I was deflated and conceded, having tried my way in AA, no one judged me. Initially, it was one heartbeat at a time. I just listened and felt at home with a new family and kept connected. I wanted what other fellows had, and AA gave me hope. The alcohol is just a symptom, but working the steps with rigorous honesty with another alcoholic helped sort my head out, where I suffered from an internal spiritual maladjustment. I'm now conscious, my fears and resentments have been removed. I learnt about what my part was, real acceptance. I had to let go of my pride and ego. It really works if you want it. And lastly, I love the doctor's opinion. It says only us alcoholics can get each other better and more. There's more, but I'll leave it there. Thank you, Georgia. I noticed both Harry and Rose nodding there at the doctor's opinion. Probably the only people who can help alcoholics or other alcoholics. More messages. Many thanks for a great, very generous things people saying. I can identify with so much that your guests are saying. Accepting that I was an alcoholic and becoming a member of AA was the best thing I've ever done, and it's led to a wonderful life. That's Jan, who's listening in Scotland, and she's 12 and a half years sober, which is incredible. Just fantastic that people are reacting to what you, our guests tonight, are saying. Don't forget, alcoholics-anonymous.org.uk. You can chat on the website and get information about meetings. Look at the website. There is no harm in taking a look. There's nobody watching you. It's all free to look at, and just, you're not committing yourself to anything, but you'll find information there that might make a difference for you or maybe someone that you love. The helpline number is 0800-9177-650. 0800-9177-650. And you can email help@aamail.org. Harry, we've heard your story. How long have you been sober now?
August just gone. I've been sober 20 years.
20 years. That's absolutely incredible. So you're into your 21st year.
I am indeed.
Of sobriety. That is fantastic. And Ros?
I'll be sober 17 years in January. So 16 years and.
Wow. So you practically, what was that? Practically 38 years of sobriety between you. That is incredible. I should have been keeping count because I reckon we've had about 100 years of sobriety in this studio. Normally, we'd be waving bye-bye to you now, but there's just one little factor that, as I mentioned, you're a couple and you met during your membership of AA. Well, how did that work? Who looked at who first? Come on. And what else still have like now? Give us all the gossip. No.
I was in the, I was leading a meeting in Southport one night, and I was waiting for, I'd taken a call the previous night from a guy who was supposed to be coming to the meeting. I was meeting him there. It was on a Friday night, and a friend of mine who had known in AA for a few years came in with a lady, and it was Rose. And Rose will tell you, I just ignored her. And I said, sorry. I said, I saw you were with Barbara, and I knew you were in good hands, so that was fine. So, and that was it. So we met at that first meeting on a Friday night.
Okay.
And then about, I get shocked for this probably, but about a month later, we were talking before a meeting. We just got chatting. And I said, well, if you fancy a coffee, you know, we'd go for a coffee. And we did. And we've been together ever since. We got married 12 months later.
Amazing. So at that coffee, Rose, there must have been a bit of a spark, maybe?
Yeah.
You, there was. Your massive smile tells me that there was.
Yeah, there was. He was very kind, you know. Yeah. And Harry's always been really into service in AA, and he was running that meeting. So, of course, because, you know, he was the leader of the meeting, you know, everybody was sitting and watching him. So, yeah. And I just remember just liking him, just thinking, you know, he was kind, he was very thoughtful. He said he ignored me, he didn't. He said, you know, you'll be fine. And he's just been so, he's been like completely, like, such a huge part of my journey. And, you know,
yeah.
I was 3.5 years sober then, so I thought that was like incredible at the time. And yeah, you know, it's always worked. It's
love blossomed.
Well, we talked to our respective sponsors first.
Yeah,
I said to my sponsor, "Can I ask you a question?" And he said, "No, and don't do it." I said, "I haven't asked you the question," and that was it. And Rose asked her sponsor, and she said, "Oh, I know Harry; he's fine."
All right.
So she'd known me for a few years.
That's
so
good news.
That was it, you know.
You got a seal of approval.
You got a seal of approval. We got good. A thumbs up. Yeah.
So I mentioned off air. I said it must be like having your own little support group, and Harry. You alluded to the fact that it's not always plain sailing with the two of you.
No, it isn't. Some days, as I say, you can have an off day and, you know, I get suggested that I look at a certain step or look at a certain form of behaviour and I stomp off into a corner and have a strop and then I come back and say, oh, you were right, I apologise.
Yeah.
Mumble. But Rose is right. I mean, Rose, we do it to each other. We know when each of us are having an off day, or we're struggling a little bit, and we know that, and we can either give each other space, or we can say, when you're ready, you know, we'll talk about it, and we talk about it honestly. We're open with each other,
and that's
we
don't hide anything.
We just talk about it honestly.
Got to be the most important thing, Harry. You've chosen a James Taylor track, which is, again, gorgeous song. Tell us what it is and why it's so important to you.
It was. I used to listen to it a lot. Before I came into AA, and it was one of those, because I felt so alone, to be honest with you, and I thought it would be wonderful to have a friend like that you could reach out to and talk to and be honest with, and have a friend that, you know, thought that much of you all the time. And now I've got a phone full of them.
That is fantastic. That's a lovely thing, you know, proper fellowship. Have a listen to the words on this one. James Taylor, "You've Got a Friend." That's Harry's choice.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, and nothing is going right, close your eyes and and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call up my name and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. See you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you got to do is call, and I'll be there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds, and that old north wind should begin to blow, keep your head together and call my name. Now, soon I'll be knocking upon your door. You just call up my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. Oh, yes, I will see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, yeah, all you got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, ain't it good to know that you've got a friend when people can be so cold? They'll hurt you and desert you. Well, they'll take your soul if you let them. Oh, yeah, but don't you let them. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Oh, babe, don't you know about winter, spring, summer, or fall? Hey, now all you've got to do is call. Lord, I'll be there, yes, I will. You've got a friend. You've got a friend, yeah. Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Oh, yeah, yeah, you've got a friend.
James Taylor, You've Got a Friend on BBC Radio Lancashire. We've had friends tonight. We're still joined by Harry and Rose and also Daniel, who opened the programme with us. Daniel, I mean, what do you make of what you've heard tonight? This, I suppose you've heard many people share many stories, and everybody's story's different, isn't it?
It is, you know, we're all unique. We all come from different backgrounds. Ultimately, we did the same thing. When we started drinking, we could not stop, but luckily, for some of us, we found a solution within AA, and certainly for anyone that's listening this evening, if they think they may have a problem. Like when I admitted to someone that I think I might have a problem with alcohol, even though I was a raving lunatic alcoholic at that stage in my life, just half-heartedly admitting my problem led to me coming to my first AA meeting and getting sober. So I think ultimately it's admitting that you've got a problem.
Yeah.
And then once you've admitted that problem, you know, working towards a solution. And for me and for these other guys that have kindly share for us tonight, they found the solution within Alcoholics Anonymous.
Absolutely. I want to just give the number out again, 0800 917 650, 0800 917 650, alcoholics-anonymous.org.uk as well.
And I just wanted to, I don't know whether you've talked about online meetings now, because you don't need to go to a face-to-face meeting anymore. You know, you
haven't
can
really
go,
talked about that, no.
You can go to meetings online, because I know that obviously there's people that may be disabled, that may have childcare issues, that
can't get
that
out
may
about.
Be a police officer, a healthcare person that don't feel that they want to be amongst other people that they may be coming into contact with. Luckily for us, COVID's changed all of that for us today. So if you call the people on the helpline or contact people on the Chat Now facility, they'll give you information of how to find your local meeting, be it face-to-face or online. And also you can talk to somebody initially about Brilliant. Who you are and what we do. And
technology
and be able to help you.
Is fantastic. With 30 seconds or so, I would like you to finish off, if you don't mind, if you close the meeting with the prayer that you would you use to do that? Take
yeah,
it away.
Yeah, certainly. So we'll use the word God as you do. I do not understand it.
God
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
I want to thank Daniel. I want to thank everybody who's taken part tonight for your searing honesty. And if you're listening, if this has made sense, these are good people. Get some help.